Hello, I'm Peter Junho Sang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form. We've featured many startups, professionals, and creatives in the realm of digital fashion on this podcast show. But is the shift into digital garment design making the industry lazy in terms of technical garment construction? Digital or physical? On today's episode, I'm joined by Andromeda Olsen-Nalem, a digital pattern making expert. Now, I can hold my hands up and say that I'm certainly not the strongest pattern maker. In this chat, Andromeda's years of experience as a lecture expert and most recently Browsewear tells me a lot that's required to become a digital pattern master. We talk about the faux pas that many designers do, the technical differences between standard pattern making and digital fashion creation, and why creators should be cautious when they think they have a good pattern just because it looks right visually on the digital avatar.
There is a kind of stigma coming from fast fashion to luxury. I was doing, you know, mainstream in Paris and I managed to get to really high-end luxury brands. But I had that focus, I had that determination. People were able to see that I had that detailed focus. But if you don't know how to pattern make, knowing a software is not actually going to help you.
Let's get the chat underway with Andromeda on this episode of Venturing Into Fashion Tech. How are you today, Andromeda?
Good, thanks.
Good to hear. I'm looking forward to today's conversation, hearing about digital pattern making and how you've shifted into digital fashion. But before we get stuck into that, for the context of our listeners, the global 3D CAD software market was valued at $10.83 billion in 2022. So it's a huge market. It's estimated to reach around $18.61 billion by 2031, with a compound annual growth rate of 6.2% between now and 2031, and that's according to Straits Research. Lectra, the PLM digital pattern-making software company, ended the year 2022 with revenues of more than €520 million, with an EBITDA close to €100 million. So let's just say that they're doing very, very well. However, it's obviously proving that such digital systems are shifting the fashion production system along, but design teams are still not necessarily having that many Lectra experts situated within their teams compared to the more traditional design skills. Which brings us on to Andromeda then, who is obviously a Lectra expert. So let's hear your story, Andromeda. How did you get passionate about this subject area? Just, you know, harking right back to, you know, when you were a little girl. How did this all come about and the fashion design processes that you actually developed?
What a great question. I've been sewing and drawing since as long as I can remember. I probably made my first dress when I was about 10 years old. When I did my A-levels, I studied French, Spanish, and fashion and textiles. So it's unsurprising that I'm here in Paris working in fashion. And then I did a degree in European fashion again, but I went to Italy instead. And once I got here to Paris, my second job was working with Vertigraph, another CAD software program. And I think just the way the technical parts of the software work, that's what really got me passionate about becoming a pattern maker, especially a CAD pattern maker. And then, you know, from then CAD to 3D, that's kind of what gets me excited.
And was it always like that, the interest in the technical elements? Because you went to fashion school.
Yeah.
And in fashion school, it is traditional pattern making by hand, tracing paper, pencil.
Very true.
It was the same for me as well. Like, we didn't learn how to use Lectra. I maybe had like two lessons on it.
I was going to say, yeah, we did learn. We learned Investronica in the first year and then we learned Gerber in the final year. But yeah, it was an hour a week or something like that. And you basically did a basic block and a little bit of grading. So yeah, I was really passionate about textiles, embroidery, knitwear. Like, those were my foundations for sure. But I really like the way that it's not just that it's a click of a button. You need to know what you're clicking and what you're clicking for. But the way that it's so precise and you can do it instantly as long as you know what you're doing. And the kind of attention to detail, the precision, like right angles are always 90 degrees. They're not, you know, half a degree off.
Depends who you're asking. Oh, if you have a building contractor or something.
Well, exactly. But if you're using the software, then as long as you're applying the function that will make it 90 degrees, then it's always going to be that. Whereas if you've got your, you know, your grading ruler, you know, your pencil might be 0.3 millimeters, it might be 0.7 millimeters, and you might just place your ruler a little bit off. Whereas as long as you're putting the right tool on the software, then you're really getting the precision that you're looking for.
So then growing up, was creativity for you about looking at those tiny details, those technical elements, whatever aspect of life, mm-hmm. but those tiny details?
I think when I was younger, I was maybe looking more at the big picture. I was probably away with the fairies, just inspired by everything, you know, from paving stones to clouds in the sky, you know, the colours of different leaves in the countryside. And I think it's just been a gradual transition, just because the CAD software in general is so simplistic. It's not taking anything away from the traditional skills. It's making the traditional skills easier.
And you mentioned earlier that you moved from the UK to mainland Europe.
It is true. Now Europe.
How did that compare from where you grew up?
So yeah, I grew up in the countryside in Wales, actually. And now I live in Paris. And obviously it's very different. It's kind of something that I'd always dreamed of, living in a big city, living a fast-paced life, you know, looking for that glamour. It's definitely not glamorous here every day, as I'm sure you know. Yeah. But I just really like the possibility that everyone has their place. It's kind of like when you're a creative coming from the countryside, you're a little bit the odd one out. Whereas when you're in the city, you can kind of find your crowd.
From a creative, technical perspective, was it different in Milan and Paris?
There's definitely different methods. I mean, things that I've learned since I've been in France is like, if your pleat is going outwards, I think it's an Italian pleat. If your pleat is going inwards, it's a French pleat. Things that we probably didn't even know that that exists in the UK.
Yeah, a pleat is a pleat.
I know that in Paris, people are working on white paper or brown paper or maybe even tracing paper for their patterns. Whereas in England, everybody's using spot and cross. Seems like in Italy, people are using tissue paper. So there's definitely different methods.
For any listeners that are thinking about learning Lectra or any of the digital fashion software, how do you make sense with all of these different terminologies and getting your head around? Like if you're working, for example, for a brand in France versus a brand in Italy, how do you not get confused?
It's always confusing. Same as if you don't speak Italian or if you don't speak French, it's going to be confusing. And it's just, you learn along the way. Everybody's got their glossary of different terms, different ways of doing things. I mean, even the fact that in English, it's a zip. In French, it's a zip. I'm pretty sure in Italian, it can be a zip, but in Spanish, it's a cremallera. Like, you know, like there's some things that are global, you know, it just depends. You just get used to it.
So you know how to make patterns manually. Yeah. Do you still do that?
Occasionally, at home, if I'm bored.
Okay, so it's more like a lethargic thing for you now.
Yeah, just like it's, you know, it's fitting to my size. I know what I look like, so I enjoy doing it on real size.
And I said right at the start of the episode, Lectra, the pattern making software company, more than €500 million worth of revenue. So it's a huge company. It has a very strong presence in the market. You are a Lectra expert, and then you've shifted into browseware. How has shifting from manual to then Lectra to then browseware, which is a different software for digital fashion, helped you to evolve your creative process?
I think that by doing it on screen, by doing it digitally, you've instantly got options at your fingertips. You can try something out and it just takes a few minutes. Whereas if you were cutting and preparing by hand, then it's a lot of effort putting the patterns, you know, cut and slash. It takes time. It's not even very accurate if you're trying to do it too quickly because you're not sticking the pieces together carefully enough. So you've got all those kind of automated options in the software that lets you try very quickly. I really like working in Lectra, the possibilities of creating. You've got your main piece, you're going to create the facings, you can create the lining. And every time you change the main piece, you know, all those dependent pieces will be changed with it. So you can make adjustments really quickly, more easily than you can in Vertigraph, more easily than you can by hand. So creating the pattern is quite enjoyable in Lectra, and there's various expert methods or half and half methods that you can create. Then going into 3D, you can directly import your Lectra DXF into Browseware or Clove for that matter. And you can then make variations. You can make your range. You can do the short version, the long version, the version with a panel, the version without a panel. You can create colorways in a matter of minutes.
You mentioned at the start as well that you worked at Vertigraph.
True.
Obviously, Lectra's competitor. How do the two differ? And for somebody trying to get into digital pattern making, do they have to work in like a company first to get to the expert level, or did it just come naturally for you?
So I was lucky enough to work at Vertigraph, also at a time when they were transitioning from a somewhat outdated version to a new and improved version, which they chose to call Expert as well, Verti Expert. But it's not as expert as Lectra, that's for sure. There are the functions of creating pleats and darts and gathers and that kind of thing, but you don't have the interrelated pieces where your front panel is related to the lining or the facing. You do have to adjust each piece one by one. For independent designers, something like Vertigraph is affordable. It'll cost you less than 10 grand €, if you're not buying the machinery, if you're just getting a software, whereas like Lectra starts around 20, 25 grand, no matter what, even as an independent. So it's fairly unaffordable.
So how does somebody get stuck into it then if they just want to experiment?
Go and work for a company, go and study it at school. That's the kind of easiest way. I'm not aware of any labs or ateliers that rent out Lectra stations at this time.
How long did it take you to train then to become expert level?
So I had a personalized training from Lectra Systems in-house at Maj and also at the Lectra offices. And that was probably a total of 5 days, if I'm not mistaken. And then I was in the deep end. So I had been working at Maj using Verti Expert for a number of years. And then we had a new team member, like our boss, who had like 20 years experience of Lectra Expert. And so then she was able to help us along the way anytime we got stuck. So it took a couple of months. I was lucky enough to, you know, work on simpler designs. Like I wasn't doing tailored jackets from the get-go. But, you know, within a couple of months, I definitely was.
So you found a position that allowed you to do that.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to get my training in-house. Yeah. But I also came from a family of geeks. Like my dad and my brother worked in IT. And I think I've just got that passion for, you know, sitting in front of a screen for hours.
And getting lost in the world of digital pattern making.
Oh my goodness, definitely.
Yeah. For our listeners that may be digital fashion designers, we mentioned there that Lectra is pretty much inaccessible because nobody can afford the license as an individual. Whereas Browseware, Clove 3D and other digital fashion design softwares, you can afford them as an independent designer. And in these systems, you can also make digital patterns as well. What are the differences between a dedicated software like Lectra versus the digital fashion design softwares?
So yeah, definitely, as far as I'm aware, I don't really know anything about Gerber, but like I've mentioned before, Lectra, you can connect, you know, the front and the back, the sleeve and the armhole, the lining and the body, the facing, the lining and the body, so that when you create the adjustments, they all work together to update each other. And the same, you can also create variations on the garment, the long version, the short version, and so forth. And I'm only aware that Lectra is the only one that does that. So that is definitely lacking in both Browseware and Clove, and similarly to Vertigraph. So I would say that working in Clove or Browseware is really similar to working in Vertigraph. You basically got, you know, your vectorial forms and tools, you know, similar than working in Illustrator, to be honest. You draw up the pattern, but the specificity that's included in both Clove and Browseware is that you still got grading, you still got pleats and darts and gathers. You can lengthen the garment, shorten the garment, just with the tools that are ready made in the software. But compared to working in Lectra, it is a little bit laborious.
Okay. So In terms of outcomes,
yeah,
are the outcomes different though?
So the outcome from 3D is obviously that you're taking your 2D CAD pattern, sewing it together and imposing it on a virtual avatar. Best part about 3D is that you've got an instant view of how you're cutting. So you can, as long as you're cutting well, it will fall well on the avatar. If your cutting is bad, if you make a mistake in the cutting, it's going to show on the avatar. So it's easy to say, oh, that doesn't look very nice. Is your pattern any good? So you've got the, you can create a multitude, you can create your collection within a couple of minutes.
Many digital fashion designers, they don't necessarily come from, you know, a traditional fashion design degree or a pattern cutting, making background. Does that mean that all of these designers are making really bad patterns and they're just really depending on the visual outcome versus the technical outcome?
There's definitely a possibility for that.
I'd just say yes.
Especially with Chloe, because they have a function, I forget exactly what it's called, but it's draw on the avatar. Hmm. And so instead of starting from a pattern and throwing it onto the avatar, you're drawing a shape on the avatar and it's pulling it back to make a pattern. Unless you're a pattern maker, you can't manage how that's working. You can't deal with the fitting. Even pattern makers don't necessarily know how to fit. There are, you know, lines, plumb lines, you know, bust, waist, hip lines, rules about how wide your front neck and back neck should be. There's a relationship between the cross front and the cross back. Even pattern makers who know about that aren't always able to deal with it. So I think much less technical designers.
And, you know, we studied at fashion school, as you've already established. We were taught that we need to draft, you know, the paper pattern manually by hand. We handwork it over and over again until that pattern is perfect, essentially. We don't necessarily need to do that in digital or 3D, as we've just established there, especially in Chloe or Browseware, where you can just pull things here and there, just shift a line here and there. We're not necessarily thinking about the pattern itself, we're thinking about the visual outcome. Therefore, do you think that 3D digital fashion takes a toll on all of those nuances between experimentation, trial and error, removing elements like inconsistencies or problems? Do you think it's making us do that?
I think it's even...
Are you lazy?
I think even in manual methods, I think it's still half and half, because in manual, you've got kind of the English way, which is probably drafting, and you've got the French way, which is moulage or draping. And I would say of, you know, the toilies, the drapers that I know, I would say only half of them are thinking about the balance and the plumb lines and those kind of things. Even they're just thinking about the visual, which is why then people struggle to make it fit afterwards, because they can't quite understand. They don't have their plumb lines set in place.
Just for our listeners, what is a plumb line?
It's a vertical line. You're going to pin a piece of string onto your mannequin. You've got a weight. It's just like for an architect, and it's going to draw the vertical line straight down.
So it's a guideline of some sort then.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, make it simple, sorry. The thing about drafting is whatever you can do on a piece of paper with a pencil, a ruler, and a protractor, you can 100% do on screen. Whatever you need to draft on paper, you can perfect it on screen. Whether you choose to perfect it or not, that's your choice. I think sometimes I take a really long time to do virtual fitting in 3D. It's probably because I am thinking about the precision and those details, and I don't want it to fall outside the kind of fitting frame, you know, the balance between the front, cross front and cross back, or the balance between the front neck and the back neck. So I think it's always a choice. It probably depends whether you're coming in as a pattern maker or as a technical designer.
But for you, things need to be perfect though, no?
That's how I roll.
Exactly. But you don't think that everyone should think?
I think everyone should think like that, but I can see very clearly that not everyone. You know, I've got 20 years of experience working in different fashion brands in Paris. And, you know, from designers to traditional pattern makers and drapers to lecture teams to from vertigraph teams or even 3D teams. Even, you know, my team at Browseware was from all over Europe. Everyone had, you know, a different experience. They were living in different countries. And it was just clear to me that not everybody sees it in the same way.
Why do you think that is?
I guess some people have been working in fast fashion. And I think, you know, I know in Paris, when you've worked in fast fashion and then you want to get into high-end or luxury brands, there is a kind of stigma coming from fast fashion to luxury. But I don't think, you know, I was working in fast fashion. I was doing, you know, mainstream in Paris and I managed to get to really high-end luxury brands. But I had that focus. I had that determination. People were able to see that I had that detailed focus. I think, you know, some people end up as pattern makers, especially in lecture, because it's kind of a course. You know, you can probably even pay for it on your unemployment status, that kind of thing. And so people think like, oh, I haven't got a job. Let me study lecture. I've heard they earn quite well. But it means that everybody's not actually interested in it. And I think, you know, it's one thing to learn lecture at university. It's like, you know, people coming out of university know all the kind of different software available. But if you don't know how to pattern make, knowing a software is not actually going to help you.
So on the subject of people not necessarily perfecting their designs, do you think then that digital fashion designers or in general where they're using digital software, where there's not necessarily that perfection level happening, do you think that is removing the craft excellence? Because pattern making is a craft.
For sure.
It's not something you can just wake up one day and just do automatically.
I mean, you can hope. But I don't think it's removing excellence. I think it allows for laziness, but I think you can be lazy, you know, using traditional methods as well. I've definitely experienced that with some of my past colleagues.
What happened? Can you tell us?
So, yes, there's definitely occasions when my colleagues were not doing excellent methods. One of the brands I work for, normally when you have a sewing pattern, you draw the finish lines and you add the seam allowance. So let's just say the seam allowance is 1 centimeter. But normally you work on the finish pattern so that you can measure the concave armhole with a convex sleeve head along the sewing line to check if the measurements correspond with or without ease and that kind of thing. But you need to be able to measure on the sewing line because you're seam allowance is a centimeter parallel. So because one is convex, one's concave, when you measure on the pattern edge, it's not similar. But what they were doing is that they were adding the seam allowance, but not drawing the sewing line, the finish line. So I don't even know how they were measuring their patterns because the finished sewing lines were not on the patterns.
So it was basically guesswork is what you are
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely guesswork. I mean, even like another brand that I was working for and they were doing made-to-measure garments. So the made-to-measure atelier would send us the paper patterns. They were finished. There were no seam allowances on the patterns. That's fine. But I would receive pattern pieces with no grain line. So good luck to me figuring out where the grain line might want to be.
So just for our listeners, what is a seam allowance and what is a grain line?
So seam allowance is on average 1 centimeter extra around your finished pattern that allows you to have space to do the sewing. And a grain line is the direction that you want to cut the pattern on the fabric. So a standard grain line is parallel to the selvage, which is the edge of the fabric.
Hopefully you can visualize that through the power of audio. But Google grain line and Google seam allowance, and hopefully that should make sense in your head why you need those two important elements and information on a pattern piece. Otherwise, it is guesswork, and the factory most of the time will just be like, what is this? You do need those information. So considering there's so many ways now to do things, where do you think pattern making is heading?
I think it's going to be a long time before pattern making goes entirely digital. I think we'll remain in some kind of hybrid mix and match state. But eventually, I don't see any reason why it can't be fully digital, because with the algorithms and the various draping methods, the new avatars, the measurements, the tools, for me, I believe that pattern making is mathematical of course, it's creative. Of course, there's fun, you know, time for fun and fantasy and all that creativity. But your body has measurements. There are rules to be respected. So when you bear that in mind, there's no reason for it to not go fully digital. It's maths.
A lot of things can go digital. It's just whether we want to go digital. That's the question. As we are in Paris, it like to be a little more traditional here. Let's just say that.
You know, like that was one of the things when we were approaching French fashion brands, you know, about browser, about taking on browser. And, you know, some of the biggest luxury names in luxury are trying out 3D digital software. What I would say to them at the time is, you know, we have this great savoir-faire. We go have this great heritage of pattern making, of design, sewing, you know, even creating fabrics. We have all those things in France. That's our heritage. But why not make digital fashion, 3D fashion, our future heritage? Why do we need to let other more tech forward countries latch onto it? Why don't we latch onto it so they don't take us over?
I completely agree with that. I think there's a huge cultural barrier, especially in France. I don't know about Italy or Spain because I haven't worked in those countries. I can only talk about France, but here
I would think they're around about the same spot.
I can imagine. I've heard some stories about both of those countries.
Countries like Germany, the Netherlands, even the UK, because there's a lot more sportswear brands in those countries, they have kind of jumped on to the digital ideas, the 3D ideas, because at this time it is also easier to make sportswear in 3D as the software stands.
So on that note, I just want to finish off the episode with a quick fire round of questions. The first answer that comes to your head, are you ready?
I hope so.
Let's see. Working with your hands versus digital design.
I'm always going to love textiles, but digital wins hands down.
What's your favorite digital design that you've ever made?
I made a 3D subtraction cutting dress. So subtraction cutting is a method made by Julia Roberts.
Which is what specifically?
So rather than cutting the design, you're cutting holes to let your body fit through in a nutshell. But you can Google subtraction cutting.
That is pattern cutting and creativity at its finest.
On a podcast for another day.
Absolutely. Maybe, Julian, if you are listening, we are open.
We'd love to have you.
Are you a fan of any upcoming 3D digital fashion designers?
Definitely. I follow heaps on Instagram. One of my favorites is Accidental Cutting. She's creating wild and wonderful forms in animation. Also, Edith Studio. She's studying patterns, sharing videos and tips. Mylene at Reformons-nous is a French lady. She's one of the people who got into zero waste fashion really early on. So she's not only doing digital and 3D, but she's also studying zero waste, which means making garments with as little waste as possible, because zero is almost impossible. So, but we call it zero waste nevertheless. Also, the Modeliste Studio, they were originally making toiles in fabric with manual methods, selling their patterns as PDFs online. And they just last week launched the Modeliste Studio 3D, and they're sharing their patterns in 3D format.
What is your best advice that you give to a designer or a company wanting to shift a design process from physical and traditional to a digital workflow?
Start hybrid, start with one product range, take it easy, be willing for it to take some time to cross over, and probably hire some interns to help you get it going, because the younger they are, the better they know software.
The biggest tip that you'd give to up-and-coming pattern-making talent wanting to make it in the industry?
Start manual, learn those methods, practice those methods, take your time to learn it, and then get into digital and 3D. Also, I'd say, like, as I mentioned, Lectra's ridiculously expensive. Chloe, you can get a monthly subscription and there is a discount for students. But the best thing to know is that Browseware offers a free, yes, that's free, F-R-E-E, free license to independent designers. You just need to sign up with a regular email like Gmail, Hotmail, and all those things. And you can get enrolled for free as an independent designer on Browseware. Without the basic training, you can't be a pattern maker.
So on that note, thank you very much, Andromeda.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to click follow to keep up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like this episode, please give us a review. If you want us to feature a specific theme or guest, please give us a message at beyondform.io. I will see you very soon.